So welcome back to Mixed Media. We just had a great time with a ton of people. I think we had like maybe 20 unique viewers or something like that, you know, popping in and out of the stream. Awesome to see people interacting in the comments and chat and all that kind of stuff. Some great works by some up-and-coming people that I hope feel encouraged, and you know, hopefully what we say accelerates people's movements forward and all that kind of stuff. But now we got to do round two. And round two is gonna go around again with film, you know, music and gaming respectively. And we're going to review Reddit, review what you guys post online to share with other people. And yeah, shout out to you guys for being brave enough to go ahead and do that and share what you've done. How about Ben next? Ben does music.
Yeah. Okay. So it looks like Fabian Gutierrez. I'm not sure if I said that right, but looks like you were with us. I'm not sure if you're still with us. So I'll start with your piece in case you're here. So I just gonna make some like quick comments about what I did, and then I'll get into your piece because these comments apply to the other piece as well. So I looked at through a whole bunch of things on R Composer. Really fascinating place. People doing a lot of really interesting stuff. And some things that just some general comments to like anybody who's posting there. Okay, so and these things apply to composers whether you're there or not. But some quick things that specifically I think apply generally to everyone there, and we'll see how that these kind of play out in these pieces that two pieces that I'm going to talk about. Number one, this is kind of my image. A lot of so the orchestra, the full symphonic romantic orchestra, is kind of like a wild lion. Okay, you need to be a really good lion tamer to take a wild lion and to tame it. I'll try and put this mildly. A lot of people on there, it's really commendable that you're trying to tackle the orchestra, and like that shows that you have a lot of passion for this the form and like the colors of it. It's great. But I think a lot of people are kind of in that space where they're like, I've owned a cat for 1 week, so I'm ready to tame a wild lion. You got to kind of work your way up to the lion. Yeah, so that's the number one thing. There are steps to mastery. And what is it that kind of, what are some of those steps? Beyond just like the ability to write notes, writing for an orchestra is just, it's a complicated thing. That's what most of people are doing on our composer. There are two important things. A lot of people talk about orchestration, but I divide orchestration into instrumentation and orchestration. So instrumentation is kind of the horizontal thing. So what happens with like one instrument, you know, as in time, right? Like if you read the score, it's going horizontally. And can you write in that line for the instrument in a way that is natural for it? It's not going to do something that it's, you know, too high, too low, can't play that. It's not natural for a player to do that. Then there's orchestration, which is the vertical aspect, which is within like 1 second. How do I combine all those lines and those sounds and make it sound balanced? And how do I get it to sound the way I want it to in my head? So there are two kind of related, but distinct skills. And that's how I kind of was taught, that there are things that need to be studied together, but also you need to like kind of separate them a little bit. And I think a lot of people, why the orchestra tends to be so much of this wild lion, is that people are coming at it and they don't have the instrumentation principles down. So, you know, it sounds great. Your computer can play it, of course, but if you put it in front of a live musician, I can't play it. I looked at several pieces that have, you know, sound really cool, but I got like 64th note runs all tongued in the flute. I'm like, no human being can do that. Okay, you don't quite have a sense yet of like what the instrument can do. So, you know, work on orchestration and instrumentation, and a great source for that, there are lots of great books on it, of course, but Orchestration Online. Not affiliated with them at all. I don't actually, not a huge fan of the person who runs it, Thomas Goss, but such a great resource. So look him up on YouTube. orchestration online. And finally, the biggest thing is just notation. Lots of people don't quite have the foundations of like how to notate things correctly. So there's a great book called Behind Bars. I can't remember the author right now. I would invest in that because you're going to save yourself so much time if anyone ever plays it, not just your computer, if they can read it right off the bat. It doesn't have any things that either will like confuse them, or even if it doesn't confuse them and they'll be able to play it, you don't want them to, the musicians, to be kind of snickering to the side and being like, this guy doesn't know what he's doing. Okay, so
I did say something in chat, by the way. Said my professor taught us to write for smaller ensembles because that's how you get a good feel for the individual instruments.
Yeah, exactly. You got to start like with one instrument, and then like, you know, maybe a flute, then just some clarinet, oboe, and then do flute, clarinet, and oboe, and you know, build it up that way. Exactly. So I think a lot of people on our composer kind of jump from like, I can write a nice pattern of notes. Now I'm going to write it for full orchestra. Okay. So on to this piece titled Pastoral Work in Progress. So this piece really stood out to me. Fabian, if you could respond here, you mentioned that this is your first fully orchestrated, I think this is your first fully orchestrated piece. Is this like, does that mean like this is the first time you've written anything for full orchestra? Or I wasn't sure if you meant that this is the first time you tried to write for orchestra without starting in piano.
Oh, he said, not really. This is the first time writing for orchestra without using a piano sketch prior.
Okay. Yeah, so that's good. You're thinking orchestrally, and you did a really good job with that. So
cool. All right, let me play a little bit of his stuff. So here we are.
Thank you.
Oh, he said this is good.
Okay. So you can pause it.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. So that's really good. I love all the ideas you have there
It's
of
very pretty, I will say. Like I
yes.
was entranced.
Yeah. You have such a great sense of harmony, vertically, and then harmony in time, like your chord progressions. It all works really, really well. All your ideas are really fantastic musical ideas. Orchestrationally and instrumentationally, I'm making out that word probably, but yeah, it's probably and things I looked at, you have the best sense of both of those. Everything is totally playable. Nobody's gonna complain, so that's a good thing. You don't want your musicians to complain. It's all pretty idiomatic writing. The one thing I'd ask is, you have a lot of octaves at a certain point there, especially in the bass. And generally, when you have multiple notes in the strings, you want to be very clear whether you want divisi or you want a double stop. It's not going to be very easy to do a double stop for any of those, but you probably just want to be absolutely clear that's what you want, and then pay attention to that, because my suspicion is that if you did have live musicians playing it, you want to remember that when you have a divisi, right, half of them on like half the basses on one note and half of them the other one, it's the computer puts like all eight on both pitches instead of in real life, four and four. So it's going to be a little bit thinner. So that's something you might want to keep in mind if you do mean divisi instead of double stops for all the strings. And that's really the only orchestration and notation thing I would mention. One other notation thing. This is the biggest thing. Every single piece I saw, measure numbers. It may not be like the standard yet in classical music, and I know this is more of a classical thing than like a media thing. It's absolutely the standard in media, and it's becoming the standard in classical music, and it should be the standard in classical music. Every measure on a full score should have a measure number. Ideally, I like the film and video game convention of large time signatures and measures for every number, every measure numbered, preferably with the number under the woodwinds and then under the strings,
I didn't know
basically.
different sections of composing sections and different genres had like different ways of notating things.
Oh yeah, not so much well, the biggest notation difference in media music is that they never use time signatures, or not time signatures, never use key signatures. But the other things, like, yeah, big time signatures, every measure gets a number. Really big, like tempo, quarter note equals whatever, makes it very easy to read, because we're in the media world, you're sight reading. The conductor's sight reading and the musicians are sight reading, and you want them to be able to play it without having to, oh, wait, was that a 4/4? Did you change time signatures there, kind of thing. And measure number is really helpful if you want someone to look at your score. So I can, anyone can just say, oh, we'll measure 34, how about this? So I'd recommend putting in measure numbers, even if it's not necessarily the standard in the classical world yet. Okay, so onto the music itself. I really love all of the themes, but one thing that I notice is it's kind of like A, B, C, D, E, F. Okay, so there's not like a ton of coherence to the whole thing. So there's not exactly a great like narrative. So it's one thing, to like have things that don't, like little sections that don't come back. And I'm not trying to say you want to be tied to like a particular form, okay? But I think this piece would work better if there's, and I know you, like you said, it's only halfway finished right now, so there's a lot of time for things to come back. But I think you want to look at ways in which you can have some material come back somehow, so that it's not just kind of like A, B, C, and you know, each idea is just gone forever. Yeah, some ways to kind of tie, you know, everything together, so we don't just, we're not just left with a collection of pretty melodies. And then, you know, the transitions, I think, are areas, so we want to work a little bit on how we can kind of not just kind of go from idea one, you know, and end of A, B starts right away. So some transitions, those are probably places you want to look a little bit at how we can kind of move from A to B. Yeah, I think, because just in general, you know, music in its narrative, it would be like, you know, if we only did, you know, like A, B, C, D, E, F, and never had some kind of way of like returning to it, even in an altered way, it's a little bit like you're reading a book and chapter one about character one, chapter two about character two, chapter three about character three, and you know, they don't connect. So you want to find some way to kind of tie things back together, and you have plenty of room to do that. So that's, I think, where you should look as you continue the piece. Yeah, and just like general, think about how, like, what kind of story you want to tell. You know, it doesn't have to, don't put it in words necessarily, but think that's going to help guide how you want things to come back and how you want themes to relate to each other. So on to the idea of pastoral. So what is a pastoral piece? So I'd think about like the history of what that term means. It literally, pastor, like a shepherd, right? And the idea of a pastoral piece initially is just, it's kind of imitating like a shepherd, lonely shepherd, you know, with his sheep, pulls out his kind of like simple, you know, reed instrument, flute like instrument, just plays a tune. Okay, and that's inspired so many composers over the years. And you do a lot of your things are really fantastic, very peaceful, gentle, pastoral things. But there are a few places, so they kind of get us out of that world. And even if they're really great ideas, so you want to think about what pastoral means. And so to me, that kind of means like clarity of structure. Okay, so it's okay to have like some complicated things going on, but you want the melody at the forefront. It should be kind of a simple, singable melody. A lot of yours are, but you want that at the forefront, and you don't want too much else that's gonna like kind of confuse us about what the melody is. So there's one part, and I guess I'd call it like the B section, where you kind of have flute and clarinet solo, both playing. You think you mark both of them solo. And it's kind of polyphonic. You can't really tell which is the melody, and it gets a little bit confusing. And it's a really cool effect, sounds lovely, but to me, that kind of gets us out of the pastoral mood a little bit. Polyphonic stuff generally, or just things that are like, you know, too close in range, and it's not really clear what's melody and what's, you know, support or counter melody. It's something you want to think about whether you want that or not. Some really good examples of pieces, which you probably know, but you can listen to, obviously Beethoven's Sixth Symphony, the Pastoral Symphony. That's kind of like the standard, or anything that's pastoral. I also really like the third movement of Tchaikovsky's Manfred Symphony. It's maybe a kind of an outside pick. That is, like, to me, the quintessential romantic pastoral piece. And then Vaughan Williams' third symphony, the Pastoral Symphony, which has some weird moments in there, because it's kind of based on like a pastoral scene of France before World War One, and then after the landscape's been ravaged by the First World War. But that's also a really great kind of 20th century model of a pastoral piece. I honestly wouldn't be surprised if you have listened to that, because your trumpet solo that we ended on, we were listening to it there, is very reminiscent of the trumpet solo in the second movement of that. And that's, to me, not really a pastoral moment. That's kind of like specifically Vaughan Williams is thinking of like a bugle player that he heard practicing one morning while he was out. Vaughan Williams was a volunteer nurse in World War One, serving in France. So he tried to capture this like bugle player he heard practicing one morning. So it's like in the pastoral landscape, but it's probably not traditional pastoral. So if you haven't heard that piece, listen to it, and your trumpet solo definitely fits in with that. If you have, you did a really nice job of kind of being in that that whole world. So yeah, I'd say just listen to different pastoral pieces like that, those that I mentioned, and probably a lot of other ones that aren't coming to my mind immediately. And I think that will help you think about what like the core elements of pastoral music are, other than kind of its clarity of structure, like, you know, simple, singable melody, kind of background that is clearly background, but can also be interesting, just not take away from that, the main idea. You have one of the things I wanted to point out is I love the chords at the end of kind of like the third section. I don't have the measure numbers, but it's maybe like third or C section, really beautiful chords in the violin that you kind of end on. So really great. I think the very last section that you have is one that might not necessarily fit in the pastoral mode either. So, you know, you can probably work out a way to make it fit in the pastoral mode, but as it is, it's kind of a little, like, I think, jumpy, a little bit too kind of excited, not just like shepherd sitting by the brook, you know, playing his flute and listening to the sheep. Yeah. So overall, so much great stuff in here. You have a really great handle of writing for the orchestra, great orchestration, great instrumentation. Like I said, players are going to be happy to play this. Nothing is, it's all beautiful. Nobody is going to have to work too hard to play their parts, which is great. It's beautiful and it's easy to play. Yeah, so I think going forward, you know, I'd recommend, like I said, thinking about what are the core elements of the pastoral mode, and then thinking about what narrative you want to have in this piece and how you can kind of bring things together, not just kind of have an idea and then it's gone forever, and then, you know, nice gentle transitions between things, and measure numbers. That's kind of one of my keys to make it much easier for anybody to read or to play it.
I don't know about anything Ben just said. No, not really. But you know, normally I follow along a lot better than I did this time. But I will just say it was gorgeous. That's all I gotta say.
We have chat messages, by the way. What someone's asking if pop music is fine for your review later. How would you feel about that, Ben?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not the most knowledgeable about pop, but I'm happy to give you my thoughts on it. I can probably go into more detail on like an orchestral thing like this, but I'm happy to talk about anything you send in. So pop music is fine.
Gotcha. And this particular piece, wasn't for a film, was it?
So if Fabian, if you want to answer that in the chat, but I didn't see anything that where you said that it was attempting to be for film. My impression while listening to it is that it was just kind of a personal kind of like a tone poem-ish sort of thing. Not specifically for trying to be cinematic.
Oh, Fabian says it's not for film. It's a symphonic movement for a larger work. Yeah, that's what he said.
Yeah, I'll just want to end just one more thing. Keep up the great work there, Fabian. And you know, if you're listening to this, definitely check out Fabian's stuff on YouTube.
Yeah. Oh, he says that Vaughan Williams' Pastoral Symphony was his main inspiration, actually. So I guess that makes a lot of sense.
That makes a lot of sense. Awesome inspiration. It's a fantastic symphony.
Yeah. To Cole, is there anywhere else I can submit except Discord? So we've got it. Everything's in the description. Anywhere you can contact us is in the description. So if you want to hit us up on Instagram, if you want to send us an Instagram message, you can. If you want to send us an email, you can. Well, however you want to contact us, we monitor them all. So submissions welcome. This is actually our first time doing this format. You know, we don't normally review people's work, but then I was just like, man, I could have used like someone who's a little bit further along in the process, like to tell me what I'm doing wrong instead of submitting to film festivals and getting denied, or like, you know, not understanding why people weren't connecting with my work. So if you appreciate it, like, let us know so that you can continue doing this, you know, just, you know, small comment about why you like it, will be helpful.
So should we look at next piece of music here?
Yeah, should I play it?
Sure, I'll just briefly introduce this. So this is another piece I found on our composer called Merlin at Mount Killerhouse, I think that's how you pronounce it, by user Karl Marx LP. So I don't think I invited Karl Marx LP, but I, if you're here, say hello. If not, like I said, I'll post this on your Reddit thread after we're done.
All right, let me play it.
Oh, hello there. Probably stop it there.
I like that too.
Okay, so Karl Marx LP or Purple Revolution Music, it's a great piece. You have a lot of really great things going for you. So first of all, you mentioned that you're kind of looking in the video game world and like building a portfolio for video game scoring, but that this isn't specifically like supposed to be something, you know, within a game, maybe like, you know, with title music or something like that. And yeah, so I agree with that. It sounds kind of like you're writing a tome poem, and I don't really know what the story of Merlin at Mount Killerhouse is. But I assume that if there is a particular story you're thinking of, probably Arthurian legend, I think that, you know, it's more of a tome poem that kind of goes along with that story. So yeah, like I said, there's a lot of really nice stuff. If you were around earlier, I talked about instrumentation and orchestration, and you have a really fantastic handle of both. Everything is quite playable. You have a good understanding of like how to balance these things. And overall, great orchestration, really nice balance. I think this would work pretty well with a live orchestra. And overall, you have really good planning and structure. So you have a really good sense of like when, you know, what each section is, how it relates to other sections, when to bring things back. So that's really great. That's, I would imagine that you're probably a bit further along in your composing career than most of the people in our composer, because you have that sense of narrative. Yes, it's very coherent logic to like what comes when. Okay, so in terms of, you know, as a piece of video game, potential video game music for your portfolio, I think you're going for like this kind of fantasy, well, obviously King Arthur, right? This kind of fantasy, okay, yeah. Yeah, makes sense because you study this at a higher level. Yeah, so I think you're going for this kind of fantasy realm sound, and you really do capture that overall. You got this air of enchantment, especially I think your first theme, the opening, and you know I think it works really well. I think overall, a lot of it would be pretty good if you know you're pitching this to a director of some kind of smaller fantasy game. There are a couple moments that maybe pull you out of that a little bit. I think that kind of the 4/4, like dun dun, I'm not gonna get it right. And I don't have measure numbers really, so dun 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 dun, something like that. I know I'm probably butchering your piece. Sorry about that. But I think you have an idea of what section I'm talking about. It's certainly British. I'll give you that. So we're, you know, we're in the Arthurian world. I don't know what your like primary instrument was or is, but my guess is you might be coming from the band world, because it sounds to me like the whole Sweets, Vaughan Williams band music, Malcolm Arnold. Like it's very much in this early 20th century British band folk world. It's not a bad or a good thing. I think like you could put this right in like one of the whole Suites and your tune works. That tune in that section, it sounds like you're pulling from British folk music. However, I don't know if you're someone who like knows that kind of repertoire. To me, like I'm listening to this, I'm like, okay, I'm like, you know, in fantasy world. Oh, and here we have Vaughan Williams. So you know, it's up to you whether you agree with that or not. Like, I think if you don't know it, it's totally effective anyway. If you do know it, maybe it pulls you out a little bit. I think it's really well written though. Okay. So and yeah, like Granger as well, something like that. Lincolnshire Posey. It's just so it's in that world and it fits in that world so perfectly. I like that 10-8 theme that you have. Stuff's going on when you're in 10-8. I think that really sounds very much like the video game world that you're trying to demonstrate for. I think that's really effective. Okay, so all that stuff is really good. Piano player. Okay. You know, if you have time, go listen to like the whole Suites for band or Lincolnshire Posey by Granger, and you'll see what I mean. It sounds like that. So it's really good to be in, like, those are the masterpieces of the band repertoire, and you've written something that could fit in there. Okay, so some notation things, and I don't want to like, I'm just going to go through a couple of these things. So number one, if you're writing for video games, and I know it's not really important if you're just trying to build a portfolio, because you're just trying to make the sound and you want to make it sound good, but you want to get in the habit in case you were to, you know, be scoring an actual video game and using live people to record it. There are some industry standards that you want to follow in your score. Okay, so number one, I mentioned this in the last review. Measure numbers, every measure, preferably twice, under the woodwinds and under the strings. Big tempo markings, so like big quarter note equals whatever, big time signatures in your score, and also in the parts. That will really help not only for, like, you know, whoever's conducting it, if it gets, you know, performed and recorded live, but also for reading purposes. It's much easier to comment if you have measure numbers that are there. That would be industry standard in video games and in general media music. Okay. A couple of other, like, smaller notational things, and a lot of this obviously is coming from the, you know, your DAW notation, which you're using, not like writing into an actual notation software. But some things just to keep in mind, in case you do want to enter this, you know, as an actual score. You know, you got a lot of things like three in a measure of 4/4, like three quarter note rests and then a quarter note. So three quarter rests and a quarter note. You know, you that just visually is not very appealing. I think almost all of the slurs in your score are underneath, which most of the time they need to be, if you're kind of following standard notation, should be above the note. It depends on the direction of a stem, obviously, but I think it's pretty much a universal setting on your notator that the slurs are underneath, which is a little bit jarring visually. Then this is just general, again, this is, has to do with the DAW that you're notating from, but if you do want to, if you do get to, you know, write for live musicians, you want to avoid all these collisions that you have and elements colliding. You got like hairpins colliding with dynamics, things like that, notes colliding with tempo markings. So those are all things that those are things just to keep in mind. So other than like technical things like collisions, a few other notation points I want to make that will just make this so much easier if anyone were to play this live.
You're saying that it's an import problem into different software. Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, these are things you probably know. I just, you know, it jumped out of me. So something that this would not be an import issue though. You really want to write how you're going to divide it. Okay. Cause if I'm reading this as a session player and I come into that 10/8, I'm going to be really lost for two measures because my instinct is not 3 + 3 + 2 + 2 when I see 10/8. I don't know what it would be, but it would probably either be 3 + 2 + 3 + 2 or 2 + 3 + 2 + 3. So you want to notate that. And then make sure, again, this is also probably just how it defaulted in your export of this, but you want to notate all the instruments in that. So you have like the horn that's just sitting there, like a whole note and then a quarter rest, which looks like it's a weird 5/4. So if they were playing that in real life, they would be very lost as to where the beat is. Okay, so I'd recommend notating, you know, writing out how you want to divide the measure. There's some other things like the flutes randomly getting on one stave, but again, that's, you know, a technical thing. Make sure your articulation is consistent between things that are instruments that are playing the same part within reason. So like if you have the flute and the oboe playing the same line, you have the oboe slurred and the flute tongued, you probably want them both to be slurred or tongued. Yeah. And just one thing also that stood out to me is I think that, I don't know if it's supposed to be a solo violin or not, but when you have just like the first violin playing kind of a solo line, I don't know if it's a section or a single instrument, but that's one area that your sound samples might improve a little bit because it sounds a little harmonica like there. So that's that would be one thing to look at. So that's a lot of really technical stuff, but really enchanting music. I think if you're like I said, you have a really great handle on structure, and I think this would work very well and works really well in your portfolio. So just keep in mind, some of these smaller things in case live musicians get to performing music one day, and hopefully they do, because it's really, really good stuff.
Cool. And again, my uneducated opinion is I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, that definitely was a lot of technical stuff. I was like, oh, I don't even, I don't, I know what these mean, but I don't really get it, I've
Yeah,
heard
that
these
may have
terms
been
before, but
it may have
that's
been
it.
too technical, but to me, you want to make sure, like, if you're going to record it, you want to make sure, 'cause you got to make sure that everything is perfect, so that you walk in the sound booth, or whether maybe you're conducting it, or you have a conductor who's conducting, who's never seen it before. They get up on the stage and they got to know what's going on while they conduct it. Your musicians have never seen it before, and time is money, so you don't want to run through it too many times. You got to make sure that it's like set up to be read, sight read, basically, in as few takes as possible.
Yeah, for sure. And I will say I went perusing through r slash composer and r slash music, or whatever the other original music or
R
something like
slash
that.
original music.
And I will say that both of the ones that Ben analyzed are like light years ahead of anything that was anything that I randomly came across. So I don't know if you care about my opinion at all, but I really enjoyed it.
Oh yeah, no. Fabian Gutierrez and Purple Revolution Music. Awesome stuff. You guys are definitely on, on the right path of all the music you're writing.
Cool. Yeah,
Yep.
and I hope you stick around to our channel. We're always around if you want to submit more stuff, you're working on stuff, even if you're in progress of stuff, you can post it on the Discord, and I'm sure Ben would be happy to comment further on however things go.
Absolutely.
Yeah, no, that was fun. We're definitely gonna do this again. I think that's a pretty much a guarantee. Maybe play with the format or whatever, who knows what,
Yeah,
but
maybe do
like
like one each instead of two.
right, exactly. But it was the first time we did this. We had no idea how long it would be. But I mean, we had people stick around, which is like, I mean, you guys are awesome. And so if you want to be alerted when we come back live, hit the subscribe button if you're on YouTube. Follow us if you're on Twitch. We post all this stuff literally everywhere we can. But if you like what you're seeing and you like what you're watching, hit the like button. We need nothing more than encouragement, more than anything else. We would like to, and we would love to have a community that's constantly having conversations about, any kind of art at all, even arts that we don't, understand or, delve into. I would love to get into,
Paintings.
painting. Yeah, I was literally gonna say that. Like, I would love to understand the minds of painters and all that kind of stuff. So, hit us up on Discord, link in the description.
Yeah, if you want to talk about dancing too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Ballet is something I look at and it's like it's so interesting, but I can't understand it other than the musical portion of it.
Yeah. So like, there you go. Like, we would really love to have arts conversations. If you're watching this or in post or listening in post or whatever, we appreciate you, and we'd love to hear what you'd want us to do in the future. If you want us to continue doing stuff like this, whatever topics you want us to cover. In fact, the best way to reach us at any given time is on Discord. There you can continue the conversation. You can tell us what you liked, didn't like about the stuff that you saw today, or submit your own work in the future. But if you choose to support us, you like what we're doing, I would be overjoyed. I wouldn't even know what I would say if someone gave us $1 a month. I think I would cry. just the gesture is so out of my mind. Cool. So I guess I'll say thank you so much for watching. We appreciate you stopping by, and we'll be back next week for another episode of Mixed Media Live.
Thanks for
All right.
listening.
Thanks for watching. See you next time.